It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Well, hello, folks. It's your old buddy Luke Clayton. I have a really special guest on today, Miss Delene Beelan. Now, Delene wrote a book that I want you all to know about. It's about red wolves. The name of the book is The Secret World of Red Wolves, The Fight to Save North America's Other Wolf. And I bet you that a lot of you folks listening up in Northeast Texas might be under the misconception that there's still wolves running around. I bet Delene's probably going to tell us they're not. Delene, thank you very much, ma'am, for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you, Luke. This is such a treat.
Well, I want to tell you, I enjoyed reading The Secret World of Red Wolves. I want all of our listeners, most people that listen to our show are outdoor types. They like to hunt and fish and nature photography, everything like that. So I think that the information you have on red wolves is going to be very interesting. Now, the truth is, in most of Texas, you know, there probably are no wild wolves, right?
That's correct. Yes, they have all pretty much gone extinct, you could say, from Texas. But there is sort of a legacy of the red wolf left in the area, if you want to call it that, in that some of the coyotes in the area probably still carry red wolf genes because they interbreed, historically they interbred with the red wolf. So especially up in Northeast Texas, some people may have seen some very red wolf-like animals that are what you could say kind of a legacy of the red wolf in that area.
And you know, I've learned a lot visiting with you and reading your book, Delene. The red wolf is the only wolf that can hybridize or, you know, cross with the coyote, right? Is that true?
Yes, so gray wolves cannot cross with coyotes. There's no documented instances of gray wolves breeding with the coyote. The red wolf can. There's also another type of wolf up in southeastern Canada called the eastern wolf, and that... it's a little disputed whether that's its own species or whether it's a subspecies of gray wolf, but we do know that that animal can also interbreed with coyotes as well.
You think maybe if you get in an area with what you think are bigger coyotes, that could be the reason for the bigger body size?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I don't think anybody knows what drives the hybridization between red wolves and coyotes. Body size has definitely been examined as a factor. You know, perhaps if you have a large male coyote and maybe a smaller female red wolf, they might approach each other in size, and that might account for why they would interbreed. You know, that's definitely one idea, but I don't think anybody has answered the question of what makes a red wolf and a coyote choose to be together, to breed and produce puppies, because even in the red wolf reintroduction area today in northeastern North Carolina, it's a five-county area on the coast. There are coyotes in the area. You know, coyotes are all throughout the east now. And one of the ways that the Fish and Wildlife Service program manages against hybridization is to sterilize coyotes in the area. And the reason they do this is because it allows that animal to hold a territory, to hold a home range, which prevents a fertile coyote from then moving in. So they have kind of a placeholder on the landscape. But even in those cases where there's a sterilized coyote, there are instances of red wolves then pairing with that animal, that sterilized animal. So that's a really interesting question. You know, why would they do that if they're not producing puppies year after year and yet they stay paired together? I don't think we know the answer.
Well, Delene, about how many red wolves are there today?
Today there's about 100. The number of the number of animals fluctuates every year. Obviously, you've got deaths and births and that sort of thing, but it has stayed at about 100 animals for the past several years. And I think this year they had about 34 puppies that they counted born in the wild. So that's kind of a moderately low, what I would call puppy crop for the year.
Yeah.
But they've in the past had up to 40, 50 or more puppies. So we're kind of wondering why there's fewer this year. But, you know, every year there's natural deaths and unnatural deaths, unfortunately, from vehicular collisions. There's also cases of illegal killings, unfortunately.
Right.
But it always stays at about 100 animals.
Well, you know, there's a place, a wildlife preserve, southwest of Dallas, down in a little town called Glen Rose. And if I'm not mistaken, I may not have my facts correct here, but it seems that there were two or three pair. They may have been, they may not have been red wolves, but I think they were. Have you heard anything about that? They're in captivity, you know.
What was the name of the facility?
Well, it's it was the Glen Rose. I forget. It's a well-known. It's one of these drive-through parks, you know. But I'm not positive of the name of it. But we've been there. It's been years since I've been there. But they had some wolves in captivity, and I'm pretty sure it could have been a gray wolf. But I know these were very rare, and I'm thinking they might have been red wolves. But I'll do a little checking into that. And maybe give those folks down there a call if you haven't been in contact with them. But
yeah, it's entirely possible. There are 41, maybe 42 facilities across the nation that house captive red wolves as part of the breeding program for them, and that's managed by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. So I'm not familiar with that one, but it's entirely possible that there are red wolves there, and with 41 facilities, I can't say I recognize each one.
Oh, yeah, there are so many of them. But I'm pretty sure that is, and that's given me a little place close to home to learn more about them. But up in North Carolina, these are radio-collared wolves, right?
Yes, that's true, yes. So the Fish and Wildlife Service manages the population by radio-collaring as many of the adult animals as they can. And this helps them keep tabs not only on the packs and where they are, but it helps them to understand what individual animals are breeding with. So to help manage against the hybridization issues, they use those radio collars to keep tabs on the animals, especially during breeding season, so they can understand, you know, is a red wolf paired with a red wolf or is it paired with a coyote? So that helps them with management. And then because they keep such close tabs on them, they know when after breeding season, you know, when it's time for the females to give birth, they start really increasing the telemetry surveys and really keeping tabs of where the individual animals are on the landscape. And when a female starts to kind of localize to a certain area, then they know that she's probably preparing a den and about to give birth. And so they wait about a week or so, and then they do what's called walking in on the wolves. And they will literally, you know, use that telemetry antennae to walk in on the den and try to count the puppies that are there. And then they also do this neat thing to keep track of the puppies where they insert what's called a pit tag under the skin. And it's a little microchip, just like you might put in your dog or your cat at the vet. And it allows a scanner you can use a scanner to read that chip, and it has a unique kind of ID on it. So that way, when that puppy grows up later in life, a year or two later, they'll do survey trapping in the fall, and they can find that animal, put a scanner on it, and know exactly which litter it came from, when it was born, and who its parents are. So it's a pretty intense way to manage a wild population, but it also lets them keep a full pedigree of the animals.
I bet being on the ground up there with the biologist, I bet you really had some fun, and you probably have many stories about what you encountered, you know, when you were out in the woods checking these animals out, right?
Yes, and I think that's one thing the book offers. You know, even though there's quite a bit of research that went into the book, I tried very hard to make it accessible to anyone to read, you know, who's a nature lover or a wildlife lover. And I think that the first-person immediacy of some of those anecdotes will be very appealing to some readers.
Oh, I think so. You know, anyone that loves the outdoors or would like to learn more about wolves, the misconception here, Deline, in Texas, and I know a lot of our listeners will agree with me, a lot of people, many people, still refer to coyotes as wolves. I mean, they do.
Oh, interesting.
I think everyone understands they're not wolves, but especially among older people, people say 50, 60 years old, most of them that I know, they refer to coyotes as wolves. But when I was a kid back in the mid 60s, in 1965, when I was about 15, I used to hunt down in South, I've talked to you about this off the air, but Southeast Texas, down around Hempstead and Waller, Hockley, down in that area, with an old gentleman that was, back then, he was in his upper 80s, Papa Dinkins, a slightly built man. He's really no kin to me, but he told tales of going, he was a little guy, and when he was younger, they would send him in. Now, don't ask me why, but they would send him in the dens and he would tell me they were wolves. And mm-hmm. I don't doubt it, because we're talking way back there. If the guy was up close to 90 in 1965, so it could be that he really did. He would. Of course, he had no pictures, but he would tell me stories, and he said they were wolves, so probably red.
Yes, it's entirely possible. That would have been the extreme southwestern air, range of the red wolf down there. But it's entirely possible, and I think that was a pretty common thing for people to do, to go into the dens and probably collect the puppies to euthanize them. They were considered pests at the time, and people didn't value them maybe the same way they do today, but that was a very common thing.
And they were cow people,
right.
Men. So you're probably right. I'm sure you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I found an interesting record in one of the chapters that deals with kind of historic perceptions of wolves in the East and the anecdotes and records and that sort of thing. But I did find a note somewhere that in Texas, in particular, red cows were sold for, I think it was less than other cows, because the wolves more commonly mistook them for deer, is what people thought, and were more likely to prey on them, so they were less valued.
Wow.
So I don't know if you've heard anything similar, but that was one of the notes that I found, one of the anecdotes.
Yeah, a lot of misconceptions. I would imagine there's more misconceptions about wolves than any animal. The whole aura from Europe and the wolf being the big bad wolf and all that, I can imagine that that's where a lot of these old wives' tales probably got started, don't you?
Sure, yeah, and that probably contributed to its demise in the East. We think that the red wolf was once spread out all throughout the Southeast through the forests here, and as soon as Europeans began settling the eastern seaboard, wolf persecution began almost immediately because of the mythology and the cultural baggage that was brought with those settlers about wolves from Europe. And I don't think people recognized, all these people knew it was the gray wolf. I don't think they recognized that this was a different animal than the gray wolf. They just saw it as a wolf. There was also religious overtones of wolves being devil's dogs and agents of the devil and that sort of thing. So they were persecuted pretty much immediately. And that was one of the things I was hoping to do with this book, is show that the red wolf is a highly misunderstood animal, because of cultural and mythological baggage associated with the word wolf, with the idea of a wolf. And it's also misunderstood, as we've alluded to previously, because of its ability to hybridize with coyotes. And we're not entirely sure right now what that interspecies interaction means. We just know they can do it, and it just kind of adds to the mysterious nature of what this animal is.
Well, it's an awesome book that you wrote, Deline. Folks, our guest has been Miss Deline Beeland, and her book is called The Secret World of Red Wolves. Now, Deline, tell everybody how they can get a copy of your book. I highly recommend it. I think anybody that loves the outdoors would enjoy it.
Yeah, I've been asking people if they have a favorite local bookstore to please order it through the bookstore. If they don't have it on the shelves, I'm sure that they can order it. That way you kind of keep your money local and help support local jobs. If you like to order online, it's available through Amazon and barnesandnoble.com as well. And Luke, I just looked up in my notes, if people want to see red wolves in Texas, there are three facilities, and you're right, the Glen Rose facility is one of them, Fossil Rim Nature or Wildlife
Fossil
Center.
Yes, Fossil Rim, right.
Yes, and then there's also in Fort Worth, there's the Fort Worth Zoological Park, and in Victoria, Texas, there's the Texas Zoo. So there are three facilities in your state where people can go and actually see what a red wolf looks like.
Very good information, and Deline, thank you very much again.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Folks, that wraps us up for this week. This show was made possible by the Dallas Safari Club, biggame.org, IC Tech Coolers, that website is hpcoolers.com, Sniper Hog Lights, that website is sniperhawglights.com, and also made possible by Texas Motor Cars in Addison, Texas, texasmotorcars.com. And do remember catfishradio.com. We'll join you right back here this time next week.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.